Welcome back to Journey Map, the craft and crew podcast where we dive deep into the professional and oftentimes very personal journeys of notable agency people. My name is Dave Hale, and today I'm joined by Nancy Crimi-Lamana, Chief Creative Officer at FCB Canada. In this episode, we talk about her word geek history, the challenges that come with transitioning into leadership, and the valuable work that FCB does with the Canadian Down Syndrome Society. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and thank you for taking this journey with us today. I already made this joke off camera, quote unquote, but we have a real celebrity today. We have Nancy Crimi-Lamana, and we are very excited to have her on. For those of you who don't know, Chief Creative Officer at FCB Canada, powerhouse in the Canadian advertising industry. Thank you so much for doing this. Amazing to have you on. Like, I want to start because there's so many stops, and I'm not saying this negatively, and I mean it very positively. There's so many stops on your CV. From, you know, junior copywriter at now defunct Canadian ad agencies, or have been since rolled up, eventually going on to be a senior writer for McCann, Young and Rubicam, Cassette, McCann again. You know, a lot of stuff happened during that period of time. But, you know, I guess the main thing being, you're just an exceptional writer and copywriter. Where did that stem from? What's your earliest childhood memory of like starting to identify as a writer?
Well, first off, there's a bunch of stops because I've been doing this a very, very, very long time. And it's just based on years in the business. I have been a word geek, I guess, from the earliest stages. I began reading very early, or I think I was 4 when I started to read. I have been a bookworm my entire life. It was noted in one of my school files that I was reading about 7 books a week, so about 1 a day. And that usually meant during class as well, and I got caught a few times. So very much an avid reader, which I think made me a good writer. I think the more you read, the more voices you understand how to write in, and it gives you a better grasp of the English language. I also used to spend a lot of my free time as a kid writing out pages of the dictionary. I know that sounds incredibly crazy, but it is the truth. I would take the dictionary and I would try and copy pages of it in the exact same font size. So very tedious task, but I very much enjoyed it. I won every spelling bee in grade school. So you can see the path. My path was set pretty early on. I knew I wanted to do something in the writing space. I thought originally I was going to go into journalism. I actually got into Carleton University for their journalism program in Ottawa, but didn't end up going there because I come from very strict Italian parents. They immigrated to Canada in the 60s. I'm first generation. And at the time, girls did not move out of the house at 18 and go away to school. That just wasn't something that was done. So without their support, I actually ended up taking literature and theater at the University of Toronto and kind of found my way into advertising accidentally, which a lot of people did.
Yeah, there's basically two routes. I think if we were to like make a spreadsheet of everyone who we've had on the show and what are the founding stories of how they wound up in advertising, it's either A, wanted to be an artist of some kind from a visual art standpoint and then said, hey, that's not going to work out, or B, was somehow involved in the music industry and then was like, I got to figure out somewhere to go from here. A few comedians in there too. So in those early days of your career, as you're working your way up the ranks as a copywriter, was there like a single client or a project or a mentor? I'm like, pretty wide open question, but like, is there a moment that you can remember, say before the age of 30, that you're like, that was like a defining moment for me or a defining experience that kind of helped put you down the path that you would continue on?
Oh my goodness. That's a really hard question. I think for me, it happened later. I think you were right when you said most people came from other places and different art backgrounds. And I think for many of us starting out in advertising that came from different backgrounds, my thought was always, I'm going to do this for now. you know, this is kind of a stopgap until I get into doing the creative thing I'm really passionate about, whatever that happens to be. And at some point in my 30s, I realized, I think it was at McCann, and I was running the GM business there. At some point in that time frame, I realized that I was really good at it and I actually really liked it. And I finally gave myself permission to make this my career and to lean in 100%. I feel like I was kind of half in, half out for the first 10 years of my career.
Yeah. Or almost like the aha moment of being like, this was a job, into being like, this is going to be my...
It's something I enjoy. I actually really like what I'm doing. I'm good at it. And I'm going to lean in. I haven't been leaning in 100%. I'm going to really lean into this and start thinking about a strategy to get to where I want to go eventually. So start to really think about where I want to see this career going and making choices based on where I want to be.
Amazing.
Versus just kind of it letting it happen, you know,
yeah.
I'm here, I'm working, this is good, you know, kind of thing. I was more of a bystander versus a participant, maybe in my own career.
Well, you know, so is it fair to say this is kind of like early 2000s, you kind of had this realization, because then you go on this absolute tear over the last 19 years since then. But, you know, when you're at McCann becoming group creative director and then going over VP and associate creative director at BBDO in the kind of mid 2000 era, as you stepped into leadership roles for the first time, obviously one of the things that happens, I'm struggling with it myself right now, is going from that kind of like individual contributor model into being a leader and a mentor model. What came naturally to you in that process, and what parts did you really struggle with?
Oh gosh, I became an ACD. I started to lead accounts at McCann, GM being kind of the most notable. And I think what came naturally to me always was the work and the client relationships. That came naturally. I could push myself further, of course, which maybe in the early days I wasn't pushing myself as hard as I could have. What didn't come naturally to me was the leadership part. I was never trained. I was never taught. Most creative people aren't. And you're kind of thrown into it and you don't really understand how it works. And I don't think I was a particularly good ACD first time I took on that role. And I actually think the ACD role is probably the hardest role to take on, because you are learning how to be a mentor. You kind of have to be selfish because you're still building your book and you're still building your creative reputation. But at the same time, you're expected to be selfless and start mentoring and start teaching people how to do it, but you're still trying to build your name and you don't know when to give up control and when not to. So you might be a little more heavy-handed in the way you work with your teams. You might smother them. You might micromanage. You're not really sure how to do it because all you've ever done is the work. And your first instinct is to do it for them versus teach them how to do it. So I do think that ACD role is a really tough one. And I don't think I was particularly good at it. And I got some pretty hard feedback, which at the time is very hard to take, but I think it made me better. Once I swallowed my pride and I kind of got, okay, yes, I recognize maybe I'm not doing this correctly. You start to course correct. Again, I don't think I was, I got much better at it. It took me a long time to get better at it. And then by the time I moved to BBDO, I was a little better at it. And, I kind of learned how to mentor a bit more, a bit better. I knew how to run clients. So that always came pretty naturally to me. And then every step you take upwards in your career, there's a huge learning curve. There always was for me. That first year of any new job that I take on, you know, I feel like I'm failing. And I think that's a natural feeling for people. It's like, you got to get past that first year. You know, you're going to feel like you're failing. You're not doing a great job. But I think all you can do is be vulnerable. When I took on the CCO role with my partner, Jeff, at the time at FCB, what we said to people is, we are junior CCOs. We are going to get things wrong. And it's just, please give us the room to be wrong or right. You know, we might be right 51% of the time, and that's a pretty good average for us right now. So, you know, just letting people know you're figuring it out. You're not going to be great at it at first, but you're learning. And I think that's okay. So yeah, every single time you take that step upwards, there's a big learning curve. It usually lasts for me anywhere from 12 to 18 months to really start to feel like I'm starting to get the hang of the role.
part of why I'm a little lost for words right now is I literally just wrote down one of the things that you said, because it only turned into therapy for me as I'm having some wild imposter syndrome these days. But
everyone does. Everyone does. It's really natural. Like, I still have imposter syndrome every time someone asks me to do something like this, a podcast. Like, why does anyone want to talk to me? I am not that interesting.
And then the host starts it off by calling you a celebrity and not allowing
you to. Then I feel even more uncomfortable.
Exactly. Yeah. So you actually are giving me a nice segue into something I wanted to touch on here. So we have a little bit of an overlap in our circles. So Tyler Turnbull, who's both a mutual friend. So we have a mutual friend, Paul Crowe. So I had met him that way. But then we also both, I guess this is going to sound like a wild egomaniacal thing to say, but it's not meant to be. We were named to Marketing Magazine 30 Under 30 in the inaugural year at the same time. So that's how I met him back then. You know, we were fresh little babies. The difference being I was actually just starting out and he would soon be named CEO of FCB. So, you know, it was a wide range of people who were allowed to be successful in those awards at the time. Where I was going with it is, like, you became new to that CCO role for FCB Toronto at basically the same time, you know, Tyler was also coming in fresh of being a CEO of a regional network for Canada at the same time. Talking about needing to learn 12 to 18 months in, I think it's also fair to say that, you know, FCB kind of hit this like turning point in that same period of time in terms of like quality of work output, focus, major wins, growth, et cetera, et cetera. So as much as you're being humble and talking about how it's hard to step into those new roles, like, what do you think that you and your team of some relatively new people in terms of new promotions, first times for a lot of senior people in those new senior roles at the time, what do you think the benefit was for the creative output, for the culture that came from that dynamic?
Well, I think first off, it was the team, the new leadership team. And I would add my partner, Jeff Hiltz, and I at the time, he brought me into FCB. He had been at FCB a long time. He had seen kind of he'd been there for the good times and the bad. And, you know, it was kind of had fallen on bad times, but Jeff had really kept the place going. So he brought me in along with Tyler. Tyler was already there. So Tyler, you know, and I worked at BBDO together. So he knew me. He'd brought in our old CSO from BBDO as well. So Shelley Brown, who's an incredible strategist, obviously, she's still with us. And so I would say the four of us, really what it came down to was believing in the exact same thing and really having a clear vision for what we wanted the agency to be. And we all believe that the most important thing was the work and the quality of our work and our output. That's all we had. That's our product, right? We have nothing else. Anyone can build capabilities. Anyone can build all the other stuff. But it really comes down to how an agency thinks and its people. So we really renewed focus on the work. And then we really, what we were trying to do, we clearly articulated what we wanted to build, which is we wanted to build the agency we always wanted to work for, with the people and partners we always wanted to work with. It was that simple. And so it was kind of like all the things we didn't like about the places we had been, we did not want to recreate at FCB. So, you know, radical transparency, you know, was important to us with our teams and staff, and really like thinking about the partners we wanted to work with and what values we wanted to bring. So it really started with grounding ourselves in our vision, you know, clear vision. We were all on the same page. We knew that the work was core to everything we were going to do. And that's what really allowed us to be successful, is just like real focus, making sure the team knew what that focus was and moving ahead from there. And we all, deep trust between all the partners, really, really deep trust. We all knew, I knew I could count on Tyler. I knew I could count on Jeff and Shelley to sell the work, to help build the work. You know, we were all in it. That's where it all started. And it's still very, very much the same today, you know, even though a couple of people have left and Jeff's retired and Tyler's moved on to take over the world. Shelley and I are still there. And we've got new partners, you know, Tracy Little and Brian Kane, who's our new CEO, who, you know, we're still building that same agency. The fundamentals haven't changed.
Well, when you talk about that agency, I think both highly contested. You've served as a judge on tons of things, Ken and D&D, Clio's, et cetera, et cetera. For me, last couple of years, I did judge for small agency of the year and digital agency of the year. And, you know, I have a really hard time as a judge getting behind the, like, not performative, but like cause driven work where I'm just like, you're using this as a fucking crutch to win more business. And as a person of color, I got a whole, like, this is performative. So you're like, what is happening here? And I kind of, like, honestly, you know, Strategy Mag, if you're listening to this, you can still welcome me back. I'll change my ways. But, like, I almost, like, judge more harshly when those cause driven pieces are presented. But I think, you know, when I think about cause driven work from agencies that have done it properly in the last few years, like FCB and your work with Canadian Down Syndrome Society, like, does stand out. And both, I'll give two stories, real life stories as to why. On our team, one of our BD leads, Leah, her one of her daughters has Down syndrome, and when I was courting her and hiring her, she has three kids and the middle one with Down syndrome, and you could tell she was, like, dancing around this, like, by the way, I have a child with a disability. Like, I also have three kids and, like, you know, just want to manage expectations and make it clear of, like, what my life is like and all this kind of stuff. And I actually, you know, through some of the work that you guys have done and its visibility, like, it actually did help in that conversation of one of the things I said back to her is I was like, how much do you want to bet that that child is the easy one? And she was like, yeah, actually it is. You know, and similarly, my wife and I, we have two daughters, and, you know, when we're in that kind of perennial to have a third or not discussion. And even as we've had some of those conversations, I've shared your work with my wife of being like, you know, there's something beautiful about, you know, these children and amazing. And my mom worked with a lot of special needs kids and would say the same thing. And so I thought that, you know, that's an example of work that, like, for at least for me, was like, I can trace back moments in my, since it came out, that I'm like, through education and destigmatization and those kinds of things, like, I actually am, you know, we hired Leah with no concern whatsoever and just things like that. So the work is actually really impactful. And I was just wondering if you could kind of speak to, of all of the causes that FCB could have taken on, like, you know, why Down Syndrome Society and kind of, like, what was the key insight and kind of creative platform that you really wanted to hone in on there?
Sure. Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Dave. Like, when we took it on, it was with the understanding that it was going to be a long-term commitment. It wasn't for award shows. It's like, we felt like we could make a difference. And so we took it on, and we put the same rigor to it as we have with our other clients, and that we developed a platform that's now 8 years on. The early days, I can tell you, the reason we ended up working with the Canadian Down Syndrome Society is because Ben, who is now the president and CEO at Leo Burnett, he has a child with Down syndrome, and he was on the board. And he at the time worked at Huge, which is an IPG company, and was inside our building at FCB. And he and Tyler were friends. And Ben approached Tyler and said, hey, I'm on the board. We're doing work, but it isn't that impactful. And we have a little bit of money, and we would like to really do something great. And so we talked about it as a leadership team. It turned out, which I didn't know at the time, Shelley had an aunt who had Down syndrome. And so it was very personal to her. And we decided to take it on. And we had Ben and some of the other families, Ed and his wife and her daughter, they came into the agency with their children. And we all got to talk to them and talk about their daily struggles. And we got to meet them and really understand what they were trying to do. And that's how the relationship started. From there, you know, we've just continued to work with them every year. Our platform is really based on empowering the Down syndrome community to make change for themselves in the world. And so just by virtue of them taking on different roles, we are fighting perception. So our goal wasn't to, like, our goal wasn't to, hey, see the ability like that, because see the ability is very common to all disabilities. We wanted to do work that was very specific and relevant to the Down syndrome community, but it wasn't about see the ability. It was more a byproduct of what they were changing in the world and what they were working towards. So you can see it in Even in Down Syndrome Answers, which was our first campaign for them, that was turning them into the experts. So you go to Google for answers, well, you're going to be met by the true experts, which is people with Down syndrome answering the most asked questions about Down syndrome when someone is diagnosed with a Down syndrome pregnancy. So every year we are very conscious of the role they play for Project Understood. They became the teachers. They taught Google how to understand people with Down syndrome. So you can see how we are empowering them to make the change they want to see in the world that's important to them. So that's really our platform. And we've done it now. You know, this year we launched Employable, which was a whole new, world's first employment network on LinkedIn for people with Down syndrome. And again, they are now, you know, we're turning them into employees. So they're always core to all the work we do. They're always the voice of the campaign. Because it's important for us to humanize them and have people understand the value they bring. So making them core to the ideas is important, and always making sure their personalities shine through. There's always a little bit of humor. They're funny. I think the one that probably changed perceptions the most was Anything But Sorry, because I don't think anyone had ever seen people with Down syndrome swearing. You know, it's like, oh, wow. Like they're just like you and me, right? They cuss, they laugh, they crack jokes. It's been I think a real pleasure for all of us over the last 8 years, and a real honor to be able to be a part of this journey with them and create the change in the world. I think, you know, the Canadian Down Syndrome Society has now kind of become the global voice for Down syndrome, and really driving global change for the community beyond Canada.
And when you have a moment to reflect, like say on a podcast interview like this, what do you think that you have or will continue to take away from the work with CDS, you know, in other projects, in, you know, for clients whose missions and mandates aren't as, tied to cause, but like, what are some of the takeaways that are kind of everlasting for you through that experience?
For us, I think the biggest learning is, it's one of my favorite sayings, is like, take a leap and a net will appear. We always set these crazy kind of ambitions for our work, and with sometimes not knowing how we're going to do it. But what we've come to realize is that we can do pretty much anything. Like we can reach out. We have built partnerships globally with some of the biggest platforms. And you think, oh, like, you know, we're from Canada. Is that person going to take our call? And we're surprised time and time again, the partnerships we're able to create with huge platforms or scientists for mindsets. It's like, so what we've learned is that if we have a crazy idea, we can make it happen. Like it, and we're not afraid to reach out and build partnerships, any partnership we need to build. So I think that's been really invaluable for our teams, is to understand that they can be innovative in their thinking, and that we can make things happen. Like we can step outside the bounds of advertising and the channels we're used to.
I really love that. Take a leap and the net will appear. Ironically, some of the largest brands we've ever worked with as an agency happened in our first 5 years. Probably because, like, as time has gone on, I've been like, yeah, making $5,000 from Red Bull or actually, you know, getting real projects, different story. But when people have asked, now I'm getting older now, so people don't ask these questions anymore, which is like starting to get under my skin of like, you don't get onto the young entrepreneur things anymore. But when people would say like, how did you get into here or here or here? I'd be like, I just called the person. Like,
you just made a call. Yeah. I know, it's like, it's the same. It's like, I think it's allowed us to take more risks in our work. Yeah. Like, what's the worst that can happen? They say no. I mean, it's okay. Yeah,
exactly. You know? Yes, exactly. Yeah. I did want to say, I'm not sure I should know this kind of stuff, but I'm not sure if Sid Lee still has their relationship with Cirque the way that they used to anyway. But if not, like, you guys got to get in there. Just, like, take the leap. The net will appear. you hope anyway.
In Cirque, you might want to make sure the net is there start.
What I'm saying. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You, when we first started speaking today, you were talking about your elementary school experience. One of the things you didn't touch on, you won the speech contest with a piece that was simply entitled Brothers.
Oh my God, I can't believe you like dug that up.
Well, it's this riveting diatribe on the pains of having an older brother. And I would love to know, like, you know, when you think back to that piece now, that young writer, you know, subject matter aside, what do you think was kind of like the creative insight that you took away as a writer moving forward after crafting such a piece?
I think what I took away from that is that my personal perspective, my point of view was valuable, like that I could write a piece about my brother and that people were interested in hearing it. So that my personal experience was important. And I think it's important that, you know, in all the work we do, and I think that's why it's super important to have people from diverse backgrounds now, you know, whether that's sexual orientation or where they grew up or where they came from. I think that makes our work better because I think personal perspective, like your personal experience, you put that into your work and that means the work is going to be more diverse and more interesting.
So if you were able to go back and speak to that little girl who wrote this piece and kind of paint the picture of where you would wind up some years later, do you think she's happy with the outcome? Have you met her expectations, exceeded them?
I think I exceeded my expectations of myself. I think, listen, I grew up in a very traditional Italian family, and I think it was important not to stand out too much as an Italian immigrant. And I think for a big part of my career, I was very quiet and I kept my head down. And I think I lost a little bit about that, of that girl who stood on stage and talked about her brother. And it took me a long time to find my voice again and to be like, it's okay to be loud and it's okay to be opinionated and it's okay to disagree with people. And I'm a pretty weird thinker. And I think I hid that for a couple of years. And I loved when advertising completely changed into it could be anything, because it was like, finally, I'm free. It's like all these crazy ideas, I can let them out. So yeah, I think it took me a while to find my way back to that little girl who wasn't afraid to talk about her own personal experience and put that into her work.
Well, it's at this point in the show where I would normally say something like, here's the URL of this agency to go check out the amazing work that they do. If you've never heard of FCB, FCB.com or FCB.com/Canada, I guess I had to still say it, but that's where to go and check them out. Nancy, just awesome to have you on. Thank you for sharing your story with us. The journey is super interesting. And you know, one thing I didn't touch on is that you kind of had this campaign US 40 over 40 award. And in some ways it does still feel like you are just getting started though. So it's like kind of funny. So
I've always been a late bloomer. That is another thing that I talk about quite a bit. I've been a late bloomer my whole life. So just hitting my stride.
Hitting your stride in style. Amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. And yeah, hopefully a part two sometime. Journey Map is hosted by me, Dave Hale, and produced by the full-service website production company, Craft & Crew. If you enjoyed today's interview and want to stay updated as new episodes of Journey Map are available, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening now.